Let's see. Introduction of the workshop presenters, Judd and Casey. And I really am thinking now I probably could have done a little checking on what I might say about that. But since that hadn't happened, I will just turn it over to who's first. Do you have an introducer?
No.
Okay.
Oh, I'm it.
I guess you are.
You're not it?
Attic name of Judd. Am I too loud? Am I going to make it squeak or squeal? Thank you, Keith, for such an eloquent introduction. I can always count on you to get to the crux of J-U-double-D. Good morning, everybody. I'm gonna first start this morning by asking for a little bit of help. Allow me to connect to a power greater than myself briefly, if you don't mind. I'm an act named Judd. I'm so excited to get to share at OKRCNA 38. There is no one in the room who's, this is their first convention, is there? Is there anyone in the room? There you are. Oh, okay. I'm going to keep coming back to you, young lady. What's your name?
Jennifer.
Welcome home, Jennifer. Did you get here yesterday, today?
I've been here since Thursday.
Oh, sweet.
I actually live here, but a friend brought me and I've been coming back.
Excellent. You already got it down. That's all you got to do. Just keep doing that. Prepare yourself, Jennifer, because, wait a minute, look here. Your life is fixing to change. Welcome to convention. Oh my goodness. So what happened was, Dee called me. We were on the way in from some NA event in Kansas, I think. And I'd missed a call from Dee, and I said, oh, crap, man, I better call Dee. What's going on with Dee? Dee is a dear friend of mine, and oh, my God, one of my uber-respected predecessors who made this possible for me and available, as well as others who are sitting in the room looking at me right now. Lots of us are here and have been here for a minute, experiencing and the miracle of this fellowship. I thought, oh wow, man! I got all excited. I said, yeah, I can share about the miracle of coming to believe. Hell yeah! I just figured out yesterday that every workshop is about one of the miracles, and you know what? We could sit and name one miracle after another for the rest of the weekend. If you've been here any length of time, you know that we can expect a miracle any minute. Hey, listen, stuff's going to go get wrong, and it's going to get difficult, and then it's going to get good again, and then something else is going to happen, and then there's another miracle. Was it Brian last night that was talking about, hey, these things ain't happening to us, they're happening for us. And the phenomena of our most gruesome traumas becoming our greatest assets happens again and again and again. I heard somebody say, I've heard it 5 times in the last 48 hours. I didn't get here on a winning streak. I did not. That is not what happened. And I was forced into this fellowship by the grace of my kind and loving God, who through a judge named McAllister, which happens to be what do you call the first name you had?
Maiden name.
Maiden name, yeah. One of the maiden names of my beautiful wife, who most of you know, sitting over here with her little dog. Anyway, this Judge McAllister informed me that society would no longer tolerate my behavior and that I was in luck because he had cages for animals like me. I thought that was a little bit harsh. I thought, God dang, is what I thought. You know what I told that judge, right? Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. Anyway, so I was forced into the rooms. I was nudged into the rooms. I spent 7 or 10 years on supervision. I was forced into the rooms. I was informed very early that me filling out my little court-appointed paper myself was not going to fly. And then, listen, I was free to go on to the penitentiary and eat all the Percocet that I could stand for as long as I wanted. And, it was such a rude awakening. So I was pushed into these rooms, miserable. I was hard-headed, miserable, but obviously too pretty for the penitentiary. And I wasn't scared of the pen. I had friends there. I had family there. I knew that all of the chemicals that made me okay were there and available. I just didn't want to do that. I really, really didn't. Anyways, so I sit in the rooms with my arms crossed for a long time, man, in the back row with the same thing. I had the same thing to say to every single body. She can't see me. I had the same thing. I sit in here clean and miserable for a year. Clean and miserable for a year. And one of my first miracles happened through a big, arrogant, ugly, my wife says he's beautiful, this cat was like, damn you miserable. You've been sitting in here all year long, miserable. I don't think I've ever seen somebody miserable as you. Anyways, that's a great story that I'll share with you at another time. But the miracle happened, and I sit down with another human being, and I got honest, and I surrendered to the suggestions. And since this guy had volunteered himself for, she's beautiful. You better treat that girl good. That sitting here and decided to follow a suggestion or two. I had followed a suggestion for a year, man, and not used, which was a miracle all in its own. And I was like sitting in the rooms. I had my arms crossed, and I did have my finger up, and I was sitting on relapse row, but it was a miracle, and my life had improved a vast amount just having stopped using. But then I started to see things and hear things that made me question myself. That cat, that original sponsor guy, he said, dude, you need a new God. And I was like, bro, you need to scoot away from me when you talk like that. You know the lightning that comes down out of the sky? There's this old grandpa dude in heaven that will strike you down. And you will bathe in the eternal fires of... Anyways... He was not impressed. He's like, bro, you need a new God. What's your God done for you lately? Tell me something about your God that I can't find in some book or hear from some pulpit somewhere. You got anything? And then I sit in a room, and where I got clean is hilarious, because I left this community and went to Pittsburgh, Latimer County community, where if you don't have a meth lab, they will issue one for you. I transferred my PO down there, and it's like my probation officer was like, "You high, right? And I'm gonna test you, so you better get clean." Anyways, oh my God, I was so miserable. I was so miserable, you guys. So I'm not a clean. I'm not a year clean and miserable yet. I would stay clean for a whole month, and then the PO wouldn't test me, and I would use. I got 30 days, baby. You know, I can do one. And then it would take me another 15 days to stop using, and I would sweat my bones, hoping that I and drinking water, lots of water. Anyways, I spent decades like that, you guys. Oh my gosh, I was so miserable. I spent 30 years in detox. Didn't matter how much I used right now. In a couple of hours, I'm going to start getting sick. My body hurts. My hair hurts. You all right, Ronnie?
Yeah.
Okay. Sheila, watch him. Spent 30 years in detox. Miserable. Flu-like symptoms at all times. And I could not imagine a survivable scenario. These are words I have found since I've gotten here. I could not imagine a survivable scenario. Who am I looking at for my time? Oh, Keith? Okay. Yeah, man. My dear friend Mark always says the only reason I didn't take myself out was because I didn't want my babies to think that I didn't love them, you know? And that was one of the profound factors that had an impact. And the things started happening, man. I started hearing people. I started seeing people when I opened up and I asked for help and I looked in your eyes, I don't know about you, I'm trying not to walk away from this mic, but when I look in your eyes and you look back in mine, I feel something. I feel something. And it's powerful. And I came to believe in that power through the miracle of Johnny M. Go ahead, Susan, cry.
No.
Go ahead. She gonna watch her. She gonna cry. I heard Ronnie G. from over there, California boy, talk about, got to put it in my body. I got to get it in my body. I have to put it in my body. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. 30 years, you guys. Tomorrow's the day. Tomorrow's the day. I'm not going to use tomorrow. I am not going to do it tomorrow. Man, I'm going to make mama proud. I'm going to go to all my own stuff. I'm going to stop cheating. I'm going to stop tricking. I'm going to stop doing all the things that I'm doing that make me feel the way that I feel tomorrow. Now wake up the next day, 30 years, you guys. Today's the day. Today's the day. I ain't going to do it today. I am not going to do it today. I am definitely not going to do it tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day. Tomorrow's the day. I am despicable. I'm a horrible person. Obviously, I don't love my babies. I don't love my mama, rest her sweet soul. Gone 16 years of an overdose now. Yeah, well, it's always a shock when we say that. It's like, man, lots of you were standing graveside with me, you know, in the two services. My sweet mother, rest her saintly soul. She was right about a lot of things, you know. She taught me some of the most valuable lessons of my life. I was 4 years clean when my mother blazed off of this planet from an overdose. I was 4 years clean. And it's a trip. I'm only looking around the room to see who's here again. But man, in the step working guides, the question about in step one that talks about what would be so painful that I would have to use and finding reservations. And that was it. That was my reservation. And I get this call from my youngest son, and I can hear him plummeting into the darkness as he's telling me, "Nanny is dead. Nanny's dead." And I'm thinking, okay, here we go. I know now in hindsight that I could hear my son disappearing into the abyss. But the first thought that came to my mind was, I was sponsoring two guys. I was 4 years clean and I had become a sponsor. Hopeless, helpless, worthless. And the first thing that I thought wasn't about my son. I was angry at my son because I knew he was laid up eating mama's morphine. But I thought, man, these guys are going to get to see a cat lose his mama and stay clean. Holy shimoly. And I realized immediately that that was my first thought. Meanwhile, I'm struggling with this God that my mother gave me. And my father, bless their hearts, that did not work for me, and I did not understand, and I did not feel comfort. I felt failure, and I felt miserable, inadequacy. I was never going to be enough. The things that went on in my mind were so ugly. The things that I had done to get the things that I had to have to keep from being sick had assassinated my spirit. My spirit was cold and dark and dead for a bunch of reasons. Because I used the way that I used, I could do things that were so despicable and not even look at them. Those chemicals were a great solution for somebody. When mom and papa put the Jack Daniels in my baby bottle while I'm laying in the crib, I'm sure that was a great solution for them. I was a difficult child, to say the least. I'm sure it was helpful. I was crushed when I was 3 years old, and I assume that's the first time I was introduced to opiate painkillers. It's like bashing puppies in the head, man, for an addict like this. I believe the disease of addiction has resided in me from conception. I'm certain of it. I know it. My beautiful mother didn't draw a clean breath her whole life, other than maybe when she was strapped down in an institution. Maybe. I'm sure they had her twisted up pretty good. The wisest woman that I know, that I've ever been exposed to. But she was right. She was right. She was wise. She taught me some magnificent things. Man, she would tell me how her God had a special purpose for me to be on this planet. And she would hold me to her breast. And you ladies in the audience, I thank you so much. You know, I love you so much. My mother would hold me against her bosom and pat me and tell me how precious that I was. and how powerful I was going to be for God's hand. And to just hold on, son. There's so much beauty in this world coming to you. And it was the only place that I can recall that was where I belonged. Where everything was going to be okay. I was going to be safe. Nobody was going to hurt me while that was happening, you know. Felt like the only place in the world where anything made sense. Today, the biggest reason I start the coffee so early in the morning is so that I can smell the coffee in the kitchen, because it takes me back to a place that is so safe and so comfortable and makes so much sense. And then, of course, I slam me some coffee early in the morning, and I make a conscious contact with the power that I have found in this universe, a power so much greater than myself, a power that when I look out here and I see you wink at me, golly, can you feel the power crackling between us? I know that you can. I know that you know that I know that you know the power that happens when we join our spirits together. Of the same spirit. It's not an accident. I believe in this power. I believe in this power. I don't know about some of those others. I'm so happy that they're here. I've gotten to do some 11-step work that's like taking me into Judaism and Islam and Hindu and Buddhists and all of those. And you know what? They all believe the same. They all have the same principles. Hey, even you Christians. All right, I'm kidding. I'm playing with y'all. Hey, it's the same principles. The trick is learning how to apply them to my life, which is happening right now. Listen, all of that that happened was just what had to happen to get me to where I was open to receive this power. All of the things that I fear about, I fear man or beast. You hear me? I am the booger man. Trust and believe that when I surrender to my, listen, Mama was right about my purpose on the planet. Mama also taught me the most valuable lesson of my life, which was that I had to learn how to establish and maintain boundaries with people that I love more than anybody else on the planet, like her. Like my babies. Those are tough lessons to learn. And they're pretty tough to share. So the purpose, the superpower that the universe gave me was the ability to reach right out of me and into you. When I look in your eyes and you look back in mine, I know that you know, Kelly, that I know that you know the same kind of suffering that I have known. And it was born of that suffering that the fracture of my spirit allowed the sunlight that you guys shared with me. You was in here. I learned how to persevere. I've gone through all the stages. Man, I'm good. I don't think I'm a year clean, bro. I'm good. No, I ain't doing no work because this is good. I don't want to mess it up. This good. Okay, I'm miserable. Oh my God, what should I do, Ronnie? What do I do now? What step are you on, dumbass? Okay, so we'll take a little action. Oh my goodness, Keith, how much time I got? Keith, somewhere else. Five? Okay. So it all started with just for today. And it all ends with right now. So I started reading just for today, every day, no matter what. No matter what else happened, two things happened. I read just for today, and I didn't use. And oh my God, I got immediately, this is good. Okay, I'm going to stay here. A year later, I'm like, I'm staying clean every day, and I'm reading just for today every day, but I'm miserable again. What? I thought I was cured there for a minute, and I don't know what happened. What happened now? Ronnie, what do I do now? Oh. But, hey, have you read your basic text? I read just for day, every day. Look, dumbass. Just for today comes straight out of the basic text. Every day. Why don't we just add one thing? Since you're not going to work any steps because you're so smart. Yeah, man. So now I'm in the literature. I'm in the basic text. Fourth grade level is not low enough for what was going on in this mind when I got here. So broken, so alone. And from that day to that, I can remember saying, I almost never forget to read the just for today. I remember saying, I almost never go a day without step work. Today I'm really close to, I do my step work and my tradition work every day. That comes first every day because without the activation of my recovery, I'm doomed. Without the activation of my recovery, bad stuff happens to good people. And I believe in you. I believe in you. I believe in you. I believe in us. Even when we're not together, we're together. Even when we're not together, we're together. I picked the phone up to call my sweet mother one time. And I realized immediately I had absorbed her spirit into my... I hadn't absorbed it. It was already there because we're of the same spirit. Her and I were blood related and we were of the same spirit. Yeah, forget about the blood. Don't put so much emphasis on the blood because Susan and I are of this. I promise you. We have loved. We have cried. We have won. We have lost. Nothing is more important than the nourishment of my spirit. The definition of recovery is the restoration of my spirit. The daily nourishment, the moment, the nourishment in this moment is more important than anything else on this planet. With this, I'm here for you. All you got to do is ask, is reach. We are of one another. We're here together. We are members because we say we are. I am committed to the principles of this program, which happens to be the same principles of all the disciplines. They had it figured out long, long, long time ago. We got each other. And I was told just yesterday, man, I wish we had what you guys had. You people network, man. I mean, yeah. Take a deep breath. Come right here, right now with me and stay here. Stay here. We are all equals here. We are all an equal piece of the same spirit. In the grassroots movement known as Narcotics Anonymous. N.A., baby. We got us. I'm so grateful. Thank you, Dee. Thank you, the committee. You guys are rock stars. I love you all. Hey, Casey. Would you like me to introduce you? I mean, I don't know that I could do it any better than Keith. Hey, you guys, I give you Casey.
Hey, thank you. My name's Casey, I'm an addict. My clean date is March 25th, 2015. Woo! Man, it's an honor and a privilege to get to speak for Narcotics Anonymous anytime, anywhere. So I just want to thank you guys for having me. I'm a little nervous. A long time ago, I had a counselor. He told me, he said, Casey, you like to complicate things. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean I like to complicate things? Give me an example. And he said, well, last week when I asked you what time it was, you told me how to build a watch. So, man, I've had a long week, y'all. My husband got a workshop here at this convention. And I told him about the topic and everything. And I said, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to share about. You know, there's all this material and all this reading. He said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a sentence. And I'm just going to spend my share off the sentence. And I said, okay, I can do that. So he came home. And he said, what'd you got? And I said, I got 4 pages of sentences. So, anyways, I'm working on it. I'm better. I've improved. But, anyways, the theme, I love the theme. It's on miracles. The definition of miracle, you might hear it more than once because every topic here is on miracles. So somebody's probably going to give you this definition. And it says it's an surprising and welcomed event. Am I speaking too loud? I sound really loud. Okay. A surprising and welcomed event that is not explainable by natural or scientific laws and is considered to be the work of a divine agency. Man, that's beautiful. And I was thinking, I came into some gratitude, man, some gratitude for being an addict and being here and being in these rooms, because I thought about all the miracles that we get to see on a daily basis here, man. All the miracles, just the miracle of being relieved from the obsession to use and seeing other people we love come in and them being delivered from the obsession to use, to having a problem, to going through a struggle and being in a meeting and hearing an answer in someone's share, you know, from being at the right place at the right time. Those divine appointments when we met our sponsor or we met another addict that saved our life. And when we looked back and we lived through, seeing what we lived through that we should not have lived through, right? Yeah. Powerful, man. So for me, my miracle started with a personal spiritual experience. And, you know, our stories and what got us here are all different. We all have different paths. We all have different things that had happened that led us here. But what's similar in our stories is the pain that we experienced that positioned us to reach out for a power greater than ourselves. And for me, what led me, that pain, man, I had left a bad situation. And I had my clothes on my back, and I had just enough money, and that was a miracle. I never had money. Just enough money in my pocket to get a motel room for 3 days. And so I gave my money to the motel rooms. They're one of those cheap, rinky-dink, little bitty motel rooms. And it was, I got the motel room. I was detoxing, and I was thinking, man, this will give me some time to think about what I need to do. And so it was just me, the clothes on my back, and a religious book And so I grabbed it. I grabbed it, and I started reading it, and I started to pray. And I started reaching out to a power greater than myself, and I found my higher power in that room that night. I was praying. I was like, what do I do? Where do I go? What am I going to do? And I kept hearing this voice, call your mom. And I was, what do I need to do? What do I got to do? Call your mom. It's getting louder and louder. And I was like, okay, God, I'll do anything but call my mom. And that voice just said, she's the only one that's going to help you right now. And I hated my mother. I hated her. I was 21 years old, and I had a 2-year-old, and she took my kid from me. And I blamed her for my addiction. I blamed her for where I was at, and I felt like it was all her fault. And so I didn't want to call her, but I went ahead and called her. So I called my mom, and I said, man, mom, I'm in a bad way. I'm in a bad way. Can you come get me? I'm ready. I'm ready to get clean. I'm ready to go to treatment. She said, Casey, I'm sorry. I can't help you anymore. And so I hung up the phone, and I thought, man, I was just confused. And I fell asleep, and I had one day left. I knew the next morning I was going to have to leave, and I didn't know where I was going to go. And I was asleep, and I heard, that's who it was. It was my mom. She came and got me. She helped me, and she got me into treatment. And man, the process of coming to believe has really been a process for me. Because that was in 2001. You guys heard my clean day. It was 2015. So that was a long time ago. So the topic they gave me for today is the miracle of coming to believe. And for me, I'm going to just share about moments when the sanity started to return in my life. And that was 9 years ago. 9 years ago on my clean day. I was in a treatment center. And this is probably the third treatment center I had been to. But I was in treatment, and my counselor, she came up to me, she called me in her office, and she said, Casey, there's some things I need to talk to you about. We did your got your psychological testing back, and there's some things that we need to talk about. She said, number one, your IQ is really low, and this is concerning. This is concerning for the fact that, you know, you're a professional, and you got a degree, you should have had some type of, you know, intelligence to get that. And I just want you to know that this is the damage that you have done to your brain. This is where you're at right now. Number two, you don't learn from your mistakes. And man, that cut deep. That cut hard, man. I was like, I don't learn from my mistakes. And I was like, you know, that's pretty hopeless, man. And I was just looking back on my life, and I'm in the first treatment center I was in. I was 15 years old. I would overdose, you know. This is my third or fourth treatment center. I don't know which. But I sat there and just thought about things. And she said, I'm going to give you an assignment. She said, she gave me a snake, a little stuffed animal snake. And she said, she gave it to me, and she said, I want you to cut the head off the snake. And I said, what does that mean? She said, well, you're going to carry this snake around until you figure that out. And so I carried that snake around, and I thought about things, and I thought, man, I've never fully surrendered, and I'm here right now, and I know that I can't use any mood and mind-altering substances, but there was one thing I was holding on to, and that was a relationship with somebody who was getting high. It was with a relationship with somebody who was using, and people, places, and things, and I was holding on to that. And so I thought, well, you know, I didn't want to be alone. I loved the instant gratification. I loved the highs and the lows. But I was just at a point where I knew I had to surrender, and I really felt bad for this dude, man. I was just kind of like, he was telling me, he was in my ear, I want to get clean, you know, and I could relate to him. I had sympathized with him. I knew what it was like to want to get clean and not be able to. And so my counselor and the people at the treatment center, they said, he wants to get clean? I said, yeah, he wants to get clean. And they said, tell him to come on. Bring him up here. We're going to help him. We want to help him. Tell him to come on up. And I was like, you're going to help him? You know, because this is, you know, we're going to get clean. We're going to live happily ever after. And I said, yeah, tell him to come on. And this was new for me. The treatment, 5 years previous, I was in a treatment center, and they told me no contact. You can't call him. You can't talk to him. We don't want you there. I was being monitored by the nursing board. They sent me all the way to Austin, Texas. I had kids in Oklahoma because they didn't want me coming back to Oklahoma being around him, because they knew I would get with him, and they knew I would get high, and I might not make it back in these rooms. And here this treatment center is saying, we want to help this guy. So I called him up, and he said, hell no. Man, I knew that if I didn't give this up, that relationship was going to kill me. And so I took that snake back. I cut the snake off the head, and I took it back into my counselor's office, and she said, "You did it." And I said, "Yeah, I'm going to let this relationship go." And I did. So sanity showed up for me in my life when I was able to make a choice that helped me instead of harmed me. Ma'am, a living clean book, it says, if our spiritual explorations take place outside of the rooms, it's crucial that we understand that NA welcomes us back from every new voyage. And that's what my home group did when I relapsed. I had gotten out of treatment. I went home. And I was paranoid, man. I was just paranoid. I didn't want to go to a meeting. They told me in treatment, you got to go to a meeting the day you get out. And I was pacing back and forth, and all I could think about was, oh, everybody thinks I'm a loser. Everybody knows I relapsed. You know, this one girl, she's probably really celebrating that I got high and that I relapsed, you know. And what are they going to think? And all the things and everything. And I battled and I paced and I thought, shoot, and I just decided to go to the meeting. So I went to the meeting. It was a full house. Everybody went around and shared. It was an excellent meeting. At the end, they said, are there any NA-related announcements? And they said, yeah, Casey's back. They all clapped. They all clapped, man. And it was just powerful. And they were all staring at me, just clapping, just looking at me. Just so thankful that I was there. So thankful that I made it back and that I was alive. And they had a card for me. And they all signed the card. And I didn't even know they knew I was getting out of treatment. How did they know I was going to the meeting? They didn't. But they were all there waiting, expecting me to show up. And I did. And pretty powerful, man. Pretty powerful. So sanity showed up in my life when I stepped out of the problem and I stepped into a spiritual solution. After some clean time and getting a sponsor, working the steps, getting all in, doing the deal, someone harmed me. And I called my sponsor up and I said, I'm telling her all about it. And I said, this is what happened. And this is what I want to do. I want to do this. I want to do this, 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 and this. And I want to pay them back. And this is what I want to do. And I was really angry. I didn't want to use. So that was a miracle. But I wanted to pay them back. And she said, oh, honey. She said, when in here, you know, you got to keep your own dignity. You know, recovery is about keeping your own dignity, doing the right thing for the right reasons. We don't retaliate in here. We don't harm somebody. I said, what? If somebody harms you, you don't harm them back? You know. This is a new concept for me. I'll try, you know. She said, yeah, you don't have to absorb somebody else's crazy. And so I didn't harm them. I did something different. I didn't harm them. And guess what? I felt good about myself. You know, I didn't have any of the remorse. I didn't have any of the guilt. I didn't have any of the pain. I didn't have any consequences. See, I always had consequences. And let's see where I'm at. I'm glad I brought my notes. But sanity showed up when I no longer acted on impulse. Something changed in me. I found a new way to live. One of the other struggles I had in these rooms was the ability to talk in front of people. Really hard. I'd be sitting in a meeting. I might say something, then I'd just freeze and forget what I was saying. You know, I was just super nervous. So people were asking me to share at their home groups and tell my story. And I straight up lie. Oh, I can't. I got to work. I'm busy. You know, I got this going on. I got that going on. I wish I could, but I have to work. And I could talk to people one-on-one. And so after a meeting, I would talk about the topic or something. They're like, man, Casey, why didn't you share that shit in a meeting? And I'm like, oh, I just can't and everything, you know. And finally, my friend said, man, you know why you're not sharing in a meeting? You know why people ask me to share at the group, you're saying no? And why you're not sharing? I said, because I have anxiety. She goes, no, you're being stingy with recovery. You're selfish. You're selfish for being stingy with it. And I was like, ouch. I don't want to be stingy with recovery, man. I don't want to be stingy with the program that saved my life. So anyways, I got another opportunity. A group asked me to come, or we went to a group event. Somebody canceled. And it was home group, different people from home group, and then somebody canceled. I said, hey, you're from Elk City. We don't have anybody from that group. Would you like to share in that spot? I said, no, man. I wasn't at work, right? So I come up with this big lie. I said, oh, no, I've done a lot of the other fellowship, and you don't want a mixed message. Oh, big time lie. But I knew, you know, how to get out of it. So Anyways, they got another girl to get up there and do it and spot. And so I listened to everybody, and she got up there, and this is the girl that I always call the girl that gave me courage. She got up there, she said her name, she said her clean date, and she said, she started crying. She started crying, and she ran out of the room. And I thought, man, that girl had more courage than I did. And if she can do it, so can I. So I got another opportunity to share. It was at a women's meeting. And I got up there, told them my name. I said, I found a new way to live. And I had prepared for an, 45-minute speak. And it lasted 12 minutes. And if you could have seen the crowd, they were like blown away. It was like a tornado was there or something. Their hair and their jaws were like this. And somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, man, this is a spiritual, not religious program. You can't be speaking in tongues like that." And my friend Jenny B, she came up to me. She said, "Oh, Casey, man, you bombed that. You did horrible. That was awful." And I was like, "Yeah, I know." And you know those friends with no filters, man? They tell the truth. And she was telling the truth. Like, you gotta love them, man. And I'm glad she did tell the truth. Because guess what I found out? You don't have to be good at something to carry a message of hope to somebody. You don't have to be a good speaker to carry a message of hope to somebody. So I'm really glad she said that. A girl came up to me after the meeting. And she said, she told me I gave her hope. Then I gave her hope to go back to school. See, I shared about my struggles getting a degree. And, how I had to do basic level courses and how to do 4 basic math classes I had to sit on, and then I got my degree. And then I shared about how I lost all that and that low IQ and all the challenges I had to go in through the nursing board just to be able to get to go back to work and everything. And she said, "Man, I really feel like I screwed everything up. I really feel like I messed my thinking up. You gave me hope to go back to college." And that was several years ago, maybe over 5 years ago when I spoke, and that girl has 3 years clean today, and she's a sophomore in college. Yeah. The next time I got to speak, a girl came up to me, and I spoke the whole hour, and there were some laughs, and there were some cries. The audience looked a little bit different. They were blown away. But a girl came up to me, and she said, she asked me to be her sponsor. And she said, "You know why I picked you?" And I said, "Why?" She said, "Because you've relapsed a lot and I don't want to." Man, I never wanted to tell my story because I had relapsed and then this happened. I had a spiritual experience and then I relapsed and then I came back and thought, nobody, people are going to think I picked the wrong God. People are going to think I picked the wrong program because it didn't work. But what was true was that I didn't work it. I didn't do the work. And the truth is our real value is in being ourselves. And it helped her. Let's see. So sanity showed up. Sanity showed itself when I was willing to do something different than I had always done. How much time do I got? Okay, I got a little bit of time to wrap it up. Yay! did I talk too fast?
No.
Okay. So I've already blown my professional anonymity. You guys know what I do for a living. one of the other challenges in recovery is I was in a monitoring program. I had to be in this monitoring program in order to keep my professional license. And they had all these challenges, man. I had to go to all these groups. I had to do all these drug testing. I had to pay all these costs. It was a nightmare, and I was making minimum wage. I was struggling. I had my kids back. And one of the groups was 45 minutes away, and I had to drive 45 minutes. The group was an hour. It cost money. And so I'm looking at all the things, and I found a loophole to get out of this. Okay, I found a loophole, and it says, if you live greater than 50 miles away, you do not have to attend this. And I live 45 miles away. So I was like, what can I do? So the dope fiend in me is like, well, how can we figure this out? I started justifying. I can lie, I started justifying, and God can understand this because I need this money for my kids. I got to take care of my kids. I need the time for my kids. God will support this and everything. And then what I planned on doing, my sister lived 15 miles the other way. So I was going to change my address with the nursing board and get my mail at her house and figure that I'll do all this crazy crap, get her in on the lie and try to make all this happen. And I finally just said, man, The program was on me. I was in the grip of the program. You know how we're in the grip of the disease? I was in the grip of the program, and I was in the fork in the road, and my integrity was being challenged here. And I went ahead and made a decision to do the right thing, to practice spiritual principle and do what you guys told me to do and trust a power greater than myself. And so I told the truth, and I started going to this group, and I made it work. And what happened as I was going to this group, I met somebody there. I met a lady that really took a liking to me. And she knew somebody. She had a son that worked in a hospital. And she said, I'm going to tell my son to get you an interview. And I said, oh, they're not going to. I already know that hospital. They don't hire anybody in the monitoring program and everything. And I had been trying all around. She said, no, I'm going to talk to him. So anyways, they called me for an interview. And I went to the interview. And I did horrible. If I would have interviewed me, I would not have hired me. That's how bad I did. They were like, what would you do in this situation? I was like, I don't know. I worked. I don't know. I was so nervous. They called me. They gave me the job. I got the job, guys. 150% increase in pay. Wow. And that's a lot more than that $20 a week I was trying to save with that lie. You know, that lie. And something amazing happened to me. And, you know, I started to see that when I practice a principle of this program, I stepped back and I got to watch a higher power work it for me way better than I ever could have with manipulating and managing and self-will. God took care of it. So... the paragraph that I, you know, remember those four pages of sentences? I texted Dee and I said, is there a sentence you want me to spin off of? She said, there's a little paragraph at the end of step two on the basic text. And just read that. And it says, we see coincidences and miracles happening in our lives. Acceptance becomes trust. We grow to feel comfortable with our higher power as a source of strength. As we learn to trust this power, we begin to overcome our fear of life. The process of coming to believe restores us to sanity. The strength to move into action comes from this belief. So it all started with hope. It all started with hope in that motel room. And that's where I found my higher power. My higher power led me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. But it was through practicing the principles that my faith increased in my higher power. And I was able to see him working in my life. And I was able to stay clean. I'm going to end with this. Man, if you're struggling with the higher power, let me tell you what the literature says. And you can find this in the basic text in step two and the how and why. And I'm just going to read you word for word what it says, okay? It says we open our minds. Open-mindedness is something we have to practice. And we practice it by listening to others. It says we allow people to tell us what's working for them. It says, in our search, we can talk to our sponsor and other recovering addicts. It is useful to question others about their spiritual beliefs. Others can help us. We may even adopt the ideas of someone else for a while, or we can just believe that they believe. It says to ask others what their ideas of a higher power is and how they arrived at it. And that's just what I shared with you, how I arrived at it. That's what I was just sharing with you guys. If you don't have a higher power, I'm happy to share mine with you or loan mine to you. Thank you for letting me share my experience, strength, and hope.
Thank both of you guys for sharing today, this morning, and thank you all for coming early.